Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Free Thought Project Podcast.
I don't want you to protest, I don't want you to ride, I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being, God damn it, my life has value.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Hello again, free thinkers, and welcome to another episode of the Free Thought Project podcast. I'm Jason Bassler, and joining me today is the Free Thought Project co-founder and editor-in-chief, Matt Agarist, and also one of the first, if not the first, Free Thought Project writer, John Vibes, who is in his own right an accomplished writer, activist, longtime journalist, and commentator. We have an awesome guest today who I've been trying to get onto the show for a few months now. We are really excited about having a conversation with him. But before I get into the interview, just a friendly reminder that we need your help to grow our podcast. Please take the time to like, share, and comment on this podcast on your podcast player of choice. So our guest today is Maj Touré. He is the founder of Black Guns Matter, which is a nonprofit educational organization focused on Second Amendment rights, firearm safety, and training in urban communities across the U.S. Maj is also a hip-hop artist out of Philadelphia and even ran for a seat in the Philadelphia City Council last year. Welcome to the show, Maj. You've been really busy this year. You've been doing a bunch of big things. You're a very active individual. Looks like you did the CPAC conference in late February of this year, and we were supposed to meet and do this podcast in person earlier in August at the Young Americans for Liberty Mobilize 2020 event in Dallas, but unfortunately that was canceled. However, a few weeks ago, you hosted the Solutionary Summit in Atlanta with a number of important speakers, including TV's Judge Joe Brown. And just yesterday, you were live on Timcast with Tim Pool. So let's start with the summit, man. How did that go? How was it received?
Oh, the summit was great. I think everybody, I don't think people knew what we were trying to accomplish there. In the beginning, it was like, oh, well, there's going to be a bunch of cool, powerful speakers there, so I'll show up. But to have the civil discourse while presenting a solution after the fact and having people disagree passionately and still leave that stage respectfully and even like have food and libations afterwards was everything. I think that liberty-based and conservative principles, a lot of times we are not presented as capable of having that, you know, type of energy. So the summit went great. It was our first one. You know, I think everybody felt good. I think that it showed that the culture of civil discourse does, you know, it's not dead. It does exist. You know, you just have to be a certain level of mature to do it. And there were people literally on some of those stages, we had people that, you know, literally, have had Twitter issues with each other, like literally on the same panel. So for them to be able to civilly disagree and show that as a direction that the culture of politics and freedom and liberty can go in is a great thing. And, you know, politics follows culture. So the Solutionary Summit was in essence just that. You know, we had, like you said, we had Joe Brown on there. You know, that's the old man's man, old grandpa type dude that everyone's got to listen to. Even if you disagree with some of the perspectives, you know what I'm saying? You're going to respect him and you're going to listen. So that was great. You give him the elder pass for chewing you out a little bit, but that's fine. You know, so we had Angela Stanton King. We had Larry Sharp. And then those folks, we had generational differences. We had political differences. Larry Sharp's obviously libertarian. Angela Stanton King's Republican. You know, I've had Van Lathan, you know, send a video in. He was actually supposed to moderate it. But he sent the video on. He is a liberal. He's self-identified as a liberal, you know, and just to have that mixture and different level of different types of people to be able to agree passionately, disagree passionately, the goal, and then leave with presenting some solutions. That's the goal. We are, in essence, losing the war on liberty because we have allowed the nanny states dictate and called things politically incorrect and so forth and so on. Political correctness is the beginning of people lying to you, you know. And so that's what our summit was, in essence, trying to fix and course correct. And I think for our very first one on a shoestring budget, I think we did very well in that regard.
That's great, man. It's good to hear that, like, that people are of different backgrounds and political cultures can get together and actually talk without, you know, trying to shout each other down or just screaming in each other's faces, man. This is a rare thing this day and age, even on Twitter. You know, it's just, we live in this cancel culture where one side has their opinions and they're unable to articulate that opinion to somebody else, you know, without, they don't even want to try. They can't even find any common ground, and it's a shame. But yeah, that's pretty awesome.
It's crazy true, because like it was like you were saying, I did Tim Pool show last night, and the chats were people yelling at me like, how dare you say this and how dare you say that? And it's like, yo, are you actually listening? I think America has a, and it's by design, I think we as a nation have for the last maybe decade or two, especially but not limited to, have been experiencing a comprehension problem. We're not comprehending the information. We're not listening fully to understand. We're listening to find out where I'm right and you're wrong, as opposed to going, oh, no, I see where you're coming from. You know what I mean? And that's, again, that speaks to the culture. We in a microwave, like 30 seconds. Like, I could cook a microwave in my convection oven in our RV. I could cook, like, I can microwave a turkey in there. But it's not going to taste as good as if I slow roasted it and put it in a regular oven and, you know, basted the turkey and took my time. And I think the microwave generation of these conversations directs, and we are being like cattle prodded into this short, no nuanced, black or white, red or blue thing, this duopoly, this monopoly of the duopoly, not just in political platforms, but in like conversation and the way that you think. Like, it is like social engineering at its finest. It's something that I call the beautiful ugly. The beauty of it is in like, man, you got that. Like, you convince people to do that. And the ugly part is the intention. But the level of synchronicity and manipulation and thought that goes into it is beautiful. It's like, wow, you guys really trick people into walking around with muzzles on their face. That's amazing. You know, and so, but the reason and the why of it is so ugly. It's, you know, so you're right. It's a lost art form, but it wasn't lost like accidentally. It was deliberately hidden over time to make people, this is my color, this is my box, this is my 6 feet apart. Do not like have a gradation. Don't think outside of this 6 feet apart. This is what they said. The government or, you know, whatever, don't get outside of compartmentalization. It's literally like 1984, the book, you know. And so we got to push back in that culture war and all of those areas. And to be able to do that seamlessly with multiple personalities re-engineers that mind to a layered, contextual, understanding, non-personal, objective thought that is critically necessary for the defense of liberty. I mean, and I always bring it back to liberty and freedom. Like, all of that other, like, none of that matters. None of the other stuff matters if I can't defend freedom and liberty. So, you know, to your point, it's 100% accurate.
Yeah, and I think the major problem that we have with this discourse today is that people lack empathy. You know, no one can understand the other person's shoes. You know, like whenever there's people out there rioting and there's people looting, like I don't condone rioting or looting, but I have empathy for the people that feel oppressed enough to be able to go out into the streets and feel like they need to burn shit down. You know, I can understand what might, or I can try to wrap my head around it, you know, like to try to put myself into their shoes to see, you know, what brought them to this point. And it goes both ways. You know, people should also be able to empathize even with bad people, you know, like the neocons and the Dick Cheneys of the world. You have to try to empathize into their shoes too. If you really want to truly understand and try to move, you know, like the whole, like society and humanity towards a freedom as a whole like that, I think that you need to have empathy in order to do that. And that's what I think we're lacking here. And it sounds like that conference that you just went to, you know, like where the liberals and Republicans and libertarians all got along with their passionate viewpoints and, you know, didn't just shout each other down. I think that shows that there's empathy trying to make a comeback.
Yeah, the most people, when you deal with them as humans, like I'm talking about even agents to the state, like I've had success in humanizing people and letting them understand that I'm in a physical form too. And I think that most people just want to be understood. You know what I mean? Not even agreed with it. Just understood. Like, yo, I feel where you're coming from. Nah, I feel that. As opposed to, nah, you're wrong. I can't even hear where you're coming from. Most people thirst for that. And that empathy, you cannot, with Black Guns Matter, I work in with, we call it solutionary lifestyle. It's a three-step part. Step one is empathy. Step two is facts. And step three is we get the solution together. Facts are working backwards. Solution is us working together from different perspectives to find out from your perspective what is advantageous for your politic, you know? And from my perspective, what's advantageous for my politic? We do that, so get to those solutions by working together and knowing what the facts are. So we go back to step two. Facts are very, like, mathematical and cold. You know what I mean? A fact of the matter is this. It's not the feeling of the matter. However, I can't even get to facts if I can't go back to the first step. I'm not dealing with you in empathy and you don't feel understood and heard and felt. That vibe, you know what I mean? It's like it's science on a weird way, but it's a higher science that deals with emotions and like chemical responses. The hypothalamus creating fucking peptides and all of these different things. These are tied to emotions, you know? It's a vibration, you know, that's a scientific term. It's a vibe, you know? I feel you, feelings, empathy. I understand and get where you're coming from.
Mark Passio, who's kind of a bigger name on YouTube and in the Liberty community, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He's actually from Philadelphia as well. Mm. But he often stresses on the balance of the left and the right brain, you know, having that empathy of the right brain, but also being able to look at facts and statistics with the left brain and having that balance, you know. And it feels like in a lot of ways, social media has kind of thrown some fuel on the fire in the sense that people have started to kind of use it to, you know, obviously promote their ideologies, but almost in a sense where they're cherry picking information to kind of market content to their echo chambers, you know, and that right. seems to kind of confirm the bias of that audience, but it doesn't allow for that empathy of the other side.
And you have to expose the contradiction in self and on your own team.
Sure.
The founding fathers, with their contradictions, were at least like, hey, guys, don't do, like, party systems. Like, it'll make it a gang mentality. And as much as my conservative brothers and sisters say these, like, catchphrases, law and order, law and order, law and order. First, they don't even know the origin of that and the dog whistle statement that it actually is in real life. But they say law and order. And I'm not opposed to law and being orderly. They're saying it from an angle, but you're not. You're saying law and order, but you're literally like following a gang mentality. It's more red versus blue than anything else, or blue versus red. They say these
using
things.
That term for a really long time as a, like you said, a dog whistle of like, you know, putting people down, you know,
right.
suppressing a growing change.
Right. Everybody does the thing that like, the thing that you use to rise to power, like most governments immediately outlaw the thing that they use to gain their independence. You look at like Gandhi and them dudes over in India getting their liberation from Britain at the time. They made salt, civil disobedience and all of that. They immediately outlawed it once they got their independence. Like, you know, it's the same thing as nature. So it's no different than like folks going... So, for example, Google, right? When Google first touched down, it was like, oh, man, this is dope. This is a creative and innovative thing. And instead of it continuing to evolve and letting new technologies and new ideas and new growth spur the expansion of Google, they started doing some of the same monopolistic things that, you know, Bell Atlantic had did before in the phone industry, or Microsoft had did in the internet world, you know, and it's like you become what you hate. But if you consistently on every side, objectively, critiquing, championing, and criticizing, constructive criticizing each side, even the side that you quote unquote are on, it's much more difficult for that stasis to set in where you become the thing that you hate, because you don't hate anything, because you can understand, because you're empathetic, you can understand each side. So going back to the like rioters and the looters, yeah, I can understand the voice, like Dr. King said, riots are the language of the, you know, the unheard. I'm not saying I agree with it, because I respect, you know, property rights, but I totally understand. I also understand a business that has insurance is like, yeah, I put a lot of years into this, but I got insurance, but I understand why the people in this community would want to destroy it. I also understand how media will manipulate and make it look like it's to people from the community when it's actually not, you know, or it's mixture. It's, you know, I also understand all of that. I get why a suburban kid wants to come to the hood and feel like he's fighting for the oppressed when no one, and you're doing it in a way that we didn't ask you to do it. I understand you might feel left out of the American dream. You know, the idle time of suburban life, if you don't feel like you have a purpose, it can lead you into chaos. I can completely disagree with it, but I can fully understand it. You know, from a better vantage point, I can overstand it. I can see it from a bird's eye view, and I get it, and I feel for those people. Now, I'm not going to let you destroy my property or my loved ones at all, you know, but I can understand it, you know, and those are the
concepts. I'm shocked that you don't know Mark Passio with using the term overstand. He uses that one all the time.
Yeah, it's a real thing, and it's like taking that vantage point and going, if you're under something, it lords over you. You can't get the full view and vantage point. When you're over it, it's like looking down. It's like, you know, in fighting, you want the high ground. I can see all of you. If you're surrounded and outgunned from a high ground point of position, best thing to do is to not, like, engage. It's best for you to, like, fall back if you can. So it's the same concept. And it's like, I get it. And then we can start to have a respectful dialogue on why, even though I get it, why I disagree with it, you know, and I'm not looking at you as this less than, other than, non-human, non-quote-unquote American, whatever. I'm looking at you as a human with a human condition, even if it's something that I completely like, yeah, you have a derangement syndrome, or you have like a lack of comprehension. I can diagnose what that issue is and still respect you as the human and go, yeah, bro, you're deranged or you're delusional. And I understand why. You know what I'm saying? And let me now share with you the facts of how we've ascertained this. Now that we've gotten the facts based on my empathy and understanding of who you are, now it becomes a facts. Now, if you agree with this and we've presented facts, how can we solve this and be solutionary and never have to have this repeat this mistake again? You know? And a lot of that is just based, that's how that objectivity is built, you know? But if I'm on the, my side is right, your side is wrong, you know, I don't understand history. I don't know that some of the people that we say, oh, George Washington was dope. George Washington was one of the primary people, like, do not do a two-party system. So if you don't even know that, and I know that you don't know that, I know why you get caught up in that duopoly, you know? I know why. You know, you're saying feminism, we need a woman's voice, even though Hillary's not running. I know why you don't know that Joe Jorgensen, the woman, is running for president. I know why. Because you pick CNN or Fox. You don't look at Al Jazeera. You don't look at independent. You don't seek out new information. So that doesn't make you less than. It just makes me understand and overstand that I have a teachable moment here.
And I have a perfect example of that derangement you were talking about real quick. It was I actually tweeted it out last week. It was you mentioned the suburban kids coming to the urban neighborhoods and, you know, acting mm-hmm. as the saviors and whatnot. And the level of confusion is just it's utterly insane. It was a black woman about 45, 50 years old trying to drive down the street, and about 15, 20 all white kids jumped in front of her car and blocked her and wouldn't let her go because they were trying to show her how oppressed she was. You know, she's like, she's honking at him, trying to get her to move out of the way. And they're like, no, you know, Black Lives Matter. And she's like, I know Black Lives Matter. What are you doing in front of me right now? You know, I'm trying to drive through here. And that's, there's the level of disconnect it takes to be able to actually think that you're doing something progressive at that moment. You know, blocking that woman's car is just, it's insane. And yeah, man, I hope like that you're working on, or that we all work on, some way to get through to these obstinate ends on the right and the left spectrum that are just, they're pulling a society apart, in my opinion.
You have to be willing to be crucified. So I did Tim Pool's show last night, right? And I told him, even I didn't see the chat. I didn't see it until like this morning. And I'm like, in your chat tonight, you're going to see most people are going to be like, oh, this dude's awesome. I love his perspective. Then you're going to have people that are like, this dude's stupid. This dude's retarded. Depending, and that they'll change based on what I'm talking about that they agree with. So right. If I say, you know, most conservatives are statists because they don't know what statists are. They don't know what conservatism actually is. They've been presented something, i.e. since 2015, that was like, you know, especially with like Conservative Inc., you've been presented something as like, you know, we wanted Black Trump supporters. We wanted Black Republicans. You've been presented something, and it's not going to critique its own side. So because those people run into somebody like me that will critique their side or challenge their ideology, and that particular thing that's the challenge for them, they're going to say, this guy's stupid. That you could take that same person later on, if I said, I don't understand why the left is so insane about Trump. He's helped in this area, he's harmed in this area, but he's been overall good for business until the Democrats, you know, destroyed, the, you know, highlighted the COVID, blew it out of proportion, and started affecting jobs negatively. Then they'll agree, this guy's the smartest thing since sliced bread. It's situational as opposed to objective. It's very subjective. And because I get that, it's like, yeah, I can predict, you know, I know what you're going to do. You're going to agree with me here. You're not going to agree with me here. Libertarians, you know, they'll agree with me on depending on what level of libertarian they are or where they are in their conditioning of it. They'll agree with me on ending the war on drugs. This guy's sharp. He gets it. He's talking about educating urban America on gun safety and responsible and political education. But then when I say, yeah, but border security is important to me, they'll go, oh, you're not a real libertarian. And then I go, well, you can't have open borders in a free state. And then in a welfare state. And they'll go, well, still, we don't believe. And I'm like, yeah, me neither. I don't think that humans should be blocked from moving anywhere. However, rights got to be reciprocated. And my thought process is very thought out. Now I can go, if we change a few things, if we have reciprocal natures with other nations, I'm all on board with that. We should work to those ends to say, hey, man, why are you, you know, we're not going to come to your country and like be criminals, right? You're not going to come to our country and be criminals. If so, we're going to get you out of there or put you in jail, then get you out of there. So let's open these borders up for these things. But we're not having people coming to your nation extracting and not putting back, and vice versa. If we could have that civil dialogue, then you'd see how silly the concept of borders are outside of security, meaning with people that are trying to actually harm you, you know. But if some nations don't want to do that, then okay, our rights can't be reciprocated that way. My thought process or my challenge is very well thought out. But if one person only heard, you didn't say open borders, the trigger happens, and it happens in each quote-unquote lane until the person has the ability of being in every lane, like an economy, and has a mixed bag. Socialism, as the dominant theme, may not be good, but doing social constructs or things that people that may need a little bit of help, philanthropy and voluntarism is a part of that. Hey, I got $1 billion. That guy needs like somewhere to live. I'm helping him. I choose to help him out for 6 months. That's philanthropy. That's helping someone to stand on their own. Now, when it becomes, do exactly what I want you to do and I'll keep paying your rent, then it becomes the state, you're the state, you know, like forcing somebody to depend on you to get an outcome that you want, and you're not helping them strengthen themselves. But when you have a mixed bag of a little bit of voluntarism, free market capitalism, a little bit of, you know, security, if you have a mixed bag where it's not overtaxed, you know, or taxation without representation or theft. When you had that mixed bag, that's a good thing. But in order to understand that mixed bag, you can't hear the word, you know, if I say America has some serious issues with our, you know, our social problems, you can't just go, oh, this guy's a social justice warrior. Well, you should be a warrior for justice in a social setting. What are you talking about? You should be a, that is liberty. I want a social, the social construct that we are in, I want to fight for justice for everyone, for everyone. But if you are triggered by that concept because you heard a word, it tells me your limitation and isolating yourself to one particular box. And it forces you to have to think in a more layered and contextual and gray area way, you know, to be able to go, I agree with these people here that I generally disagree with. I agree disagree with these people here that I generally agree with, without attacking them negatively for having different viewpoints. That's actually what America is supposed to be, a cultural melting pot. That's actually what it's supposed to be. And not just like, oh, we got different hues and skin tones, like a cultural melting pot of all of the things that we value, like our values, our views, our thought, diversity of thought, you know? And so it's just a certain level of evolution that, you know, some of us are on, that we aren't trapped by the one box and we can move freely through these boxes. And we then also aren't offended by other people that are trapped by those particular boxes. And like we call them for, you're stupid. No, it's just, yo, they haven't studied enough yet. Not enough lived experience has happened to that person yet. You know, like all of world history shows us that like inflation and like printing money has been historically bad, but we still on it. You know, people still ain't paying attention to Austrian economics by and large. Okay, cool. I get it. I overstand. You were raised in a school that the school system that was created by an owner that didn't want you to think. The Department of Education was created to make good workers. I get it. I understand it. I overstand it. So I'm not mad at you. You don't know what you don't know. All I can do is chop up the apple to nourish you into applesauce, because right now you're cutting your teeth. You can't chew this apple all the way. I have to nurture you to the point, unless you don't want to. Then I go, all right, they don't want it. Cool. They're comfortable with what they want. Now, who are you to tell them otherwise? You know? And if they're asking, you share the information and you move on. Freedom cut both ways, baby. They have the right to not want to listen to you. They have the right to do it their way. I don't have to agree with it. And I could, it could be as like politically, socially, and culturally, I could view it as dumb as possible. I could scientifically prove how it doesn't work. Socialism, the Earth's history is littered with socialist experiments that have not panned out. I have to respect somebody else's ability to be like, well, that wasn't the real socialism. This is the real one. Okay. When you come around, you got this free market thing going on, not cronyism, you know what I mean? And you just remain open. And that's the real bag. That's the real security. You know, you don't suffer from insecurity when you at that level. You know, I could go on and on forever, but, you know.
Appreciate your insight, man. And, you know, you're saying chopping up the apple. We kind of call that planting seeds. You know, that's kind of the way we phrase it. And if people want to grow that tree, then we're just planting the seeds of information for them to look into that information, look into that and grow their own knowledge. But what you were saying before definitely resonates with me. And I feel like ad hominems, you know, or any type of fallacy really is always kind of a red flag. But fortunately, it seems like that's the majority of the public right now, at least on social media. And it seems like polarization and tribalism's at an all-time high. You know, of course, I'm not super old, so I can't really reflect back into like the 50s, 60s and whatnot. But, you know, kind of pointing to what I had said earlier, you know, it does feel like social media is just expediting that whole process. I had a tweet a few weeks back, and I basically said there's like three things lacking right now in America, and, you know, critical thinking being one of them. That's not something that we're necessarily taught through public schools. Intellectual integrity because even if we do have the chance to sit down with people, they still have to have integrity to understand that their point of view, their biases aren't always correct. And I think that's a huge hurdle to try to get over a lot of times. And then the third one is human empathy. You know, it feels like we were talking earlier in this conversation, that's just something that's completely lacking. And it only, you know, fuels the polarization and puts people on those sides against each other, you know, and we've already have enough of that with the state against the people, you know, and now that we're fighting with each other, you know, the left and the right. And speaking of that, you know, obviously the hot topic right now is the whole Breonna Taylor case. Louisville has extensive protests going on. I expect them to keep going on for who knows how long, probably months. 127 people were arrested last night, and even two cops were reportedly shot during the protest or riots. I'm not quite sure what they're classifying them as right now. But what is your take on that whole incident? Like, how do you think it could have been prevented? And what are your thoughts on the ongoing protests around the country and police violence in general?
So first, it highlights the bigger conversation. The war on drugs is a sham. It's 100%. Like all of these things come from, like, you know, it's like, you know, Eric Garner choked to death for selling loose cigarettes. Something that if you sell in a pack are lawful. If you got like this, if you gave the state, you know, $20 or whatever the cigarette selling fee is, it's lawful. But because he's selling them as loosey, gets choked to death, right? We got to stop guys from selling death in the form of nicotine unless we can do it. And I'm saying this as a guy that smokes cigars. So the war on drugs, Breonna, there was rumor that she was drug dealing and blah, blah, blah. Drugs goes like this. I want some weed. I got weed. I got the money. Transaction. Boom. That's it. I don't walk up to the guy, point a gun at him like, you better buy this weed. It's not how it goes. You know, so it speaks to that first and foremost. I think we're leaving that out of the conversation. It also speaks to the fact that these warrants, we're upset about the officers who either one of those three guys were charged, and his charges carry up to 5 years for shooting wantonly, like reckless. He shot three apartments or whatever, right? This guy, then the other two officers that weren't charged shot back after being shot because, you know, Kenneth Walker, her boyfriend, knew that somebody was breaking in the house. He didn't know who exactly they were. He shot. They shot at him. So two people are not charged. One person is charged. I'm good with that. Breonna Taylor's family got a $12 million settlement. Unfortunately, she died. And we're talking about a bigger conversation of the war on drugs. And, you know, even though they say this wasn't a no-knock raid, they shouldn't exist, right? Rand Paul puts out legislation, a bill to end no-knock raids. So those parts are good. Let's look at the war on drugs being a futile and tremendous waste of resources, and it's a failure. That's one. Two, no-knock raids should not be a thing. This highlights the potential for no-knock raids going bad. Should not be a thing. And we have to look at judges and or people that sign off on warrants. The guy that they were looking for was already in custody. So when are we going to hold the people writing these warrants accountable? Because I see we're talking about the cop that's executing the order, but we're not talking about who gave the order. If I order a hit on somebody and the person I hired to go kill somebody goes to the police and says, Maj hired me to kill somebody. I didn't kill him. I came to tell y'all. I get arrested for trying to push the order. It's wrong. The person that either does the hit or doesn't do the hit, whether they do or don't is determined whether they go to jail or not. But the person that gives the order is absolutely charged. So we got to look at that. All of that's tied into it. So that's my take on it. That's the silver lining that I'll pull from it. In regards to the riots, you're dealing with, I don't condone it, but again, I understand it. You're dealing with people that have been manipulated by media as well to make it look like these deaths are far more than they actually are. One is enough. Let's be clear about that. This isn't to make light of any Americans dying, especially at the hands of the state, right? at the same time, media's hyping that up. And they're making it like it's just it's like, never mind high cholesterol or like blood, heart disease. Never mind that. Right? We're going to make this the thing. It's sexy. It gets ticks. It gets, you know, like clicks. It gets all of that energy. Media's manipulating them. And they have a legit lived experience that has not been the best with law enforcement in the communities. Your relationship with law enforcement in the suburbs and rural areas is completely different than in cities, especially blue cities. So you have these people with lived experience that feel frustrated. Then media hypes them up. They swallow that pill. Media exasperates it, highlights it, tells half stories. Nobody checks the media for them putting out false information. Same thing with the judges that write these warrants. Nobody looks at those culprits. Then the people's businesses get destroyed. Then people go to jail. Then law enforcement officers get shot and citizens get shot. And the people that's pulling the Geppettos and the puppet string pullers go unnoticed. It's all by design. You got it. And this part sounds like I'm being dismissive, but I truly am not. You know, I'm truly not saying that.
Well, I'm sorry.
I'm not saying that it minimizes it. I'm just saying step back and look at the like how they playing you. And then in not responding one way, you can respond a better way with like legislation. So for example, when all of this started with George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery and all these different cases, right? The biggest issue was police brutality, which is legit. I don't care. No American should be unjustifiably killed by the state without being an imminent threat to people's lives without accountability. So the thing that we said was, okay, we want to end qualified immunity, make law enforcement officers be civilly liable as well as criminally liable if they're found criminally guilty for their killings. And all of this rioting and all of this arguing, only one state, Colorado, has ended qualified immunity. One. So we get lost in the weeds by the media manipulation. So if I would challenge everybody that's rioting is to step back and reevaluate your approach. You know, sometimes when you talk to a girl, what works with one hot girl will not work with another hot girl. You know, it's sometimes you got to like sit down and have 6 months of conversations with this one young lady. This other one young lady, depending on what your agenda is, with how you get to her heart or whatever else, you might have to buy her stuff, you know. Some of them it's, hey, man, I have to teach you something or whatever. You have to show your strength or humility. But it's situational. Your approach has to be different. Same thing here. The approach for legit change has to be different. You had, you know, Dr. Rand Paul coming out of the White House or, you know, some sort of White House thing, Republican thing, right? And people were like the BLM people and Antifa people were yelling at him like, say her name, say Breonna Taylor's name, not even knowing that he's the guy that drafted the legislation or the bill that would end no-knock raids. Right. That, you know, so your approach has to change. And that's my challenge to the people in it. I understand you, but is it as productive and most productive as you would like it to be? And it may not be. And in all instances, when you're being so easily manipulated, the safe money is on, it probably isn't as productive as it could be, you know?
Yeah, man. That goes hand in hand with the whole empathy thing. You know, everybody just wants an enemy or a punching bag to beat up on. And that's kind of where I draw issue with Black Lives Matter. I actually wrote like a long article, not because of what they stand for, but because of the solutions that many of them are proposing are really just reactionary and socialist in nature, even Marxist, a couple of them. You know, I mean, I'm not painting the whole group as a group of Marxists, but you don't see signs out there saying in the drug war. You know, like you said, the drug war is one of the most brutal inventions of government that in the history of mankind. I mean, you have wars you have wars that kill millions of people and starvation and all this, but the drug war, it legitimizes aggression against nonviolent and otherwise entirely innocent people. And it actually creates an incentive because it pays the police back. you know, they can go and they can say, hey, this guy got some weed, let's steal his car and all of his cash, you know, and then we get, and it's it legitimizes police and then brutality, and it creates all these instances of all these interactions that otherwise wouldn't happen, that you know, that leads to six million arrests, you know, in 10 years for marijuana, or 600,000 people in jail for when they committed a crime which has no victim, and that's what I'm, you know, that's what I'm saying. They don't have the solutions that are being proposed, or they're not solutions. No one's proposing. CNN, like you just said, they get riled up, they get everybody pissed off, they get them in the streets, and then they just throw gas on the fucking fire. No one's talking about anything other than, you know, like defund the police. And sure, police make some of these cops make $250,000 a year. But, you know, there's solutions out there that would be drastic and radical and peaceful and have magnitudes better change than what they're talking about right now.
Absolutely. The whole current situation right now, it's like it's structured as a Ponzi scheme to generate revenue for the state. It's not. And more control for the state, and an over-militarized police force for the state. It's not protecting the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness and property for the people. Our challenge is to make sure that we're doing things that redirects that narrative back into constitutional human rights as codified in the Constitution and Bill of Rights. That's our challenge, to inform people to make the culture shift happen, and the politics will follow that culture. So, for example, you got states like Texas that don't have the best gun laws, right, to give a brief example. They don't have the most, you know, the best gun laws or respect for the Second Amendment, but they have great gun culture. So you know that you shouldn't run up in somebody's house in Texas because you might run into some buckshot or AR round, you know. So culture will find a way to exist and strengthen the civil and human rights of the populace. But we have been complicit in not informing people about that, you know. And it was a good move on the opposition's part. They took it out of the schools. They made the schools leftist propaganda spots. And we haven't pushed back with informing people, especially in highly populated areas like urban America. That's why our work at Black Guns Matter is so important. Yeah, it deals with firearm safety and knowledge and all of that, but it also deals with political education and then ties it into conflict resolution. So the culture is of safe, responsible ownership and handling the responsibilities that come with those rights. And then when you're doing that, your culture changes, and then your political decisions, especially on a local level, shift. And that's why what I work, you know, what we're doing is so impactful. And, you know, I'm going to give myself another year and some change, you know, and if something doesn't drastically change in 2022, I'm out. Because we've given ourselves and we've seen impact, no doubt. But I believe that the general public is too soft. And I'm at a point where I believe that the general public, by and large, have accepted their fate as slaves.
And apathy.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, man, I did my time. I gave everything for the next year and some change. Like, I'm going to give everything. Like, my uncle died today, and it's like, let's get the work done. That's my thought, you know? I probably won't be able to properly grieve and heal for a while because I got to do 2, 3, 4 more interviews after this, and I got to print up shirts. And, you know, we don't complain. We put our, you know, we put our boots down, and you sleep, you rest well at night. I'll, you know, take a hot bath, you know, but the time to properly grieve and heal. I probably won't get to do that for some months now, but my point in saying that is I have to give all of myself to liberty and freedom for some time. And if the people don't actually want it because the information is there and we've made ourselves available and we've raised over $365,000 and gave it away to offset the financial barriers of people wanting to learn this stuff, if we did that and we get to our $1 million goal and if the people still aren't, they're like going in the direction of freedom and liberty, they are making a choice, and I have to respect their choice. And I'll just fade off into like Thanos, into my own planet, acres, and just like, you know, hunt and shoot and fish and protect my 77 acres.
Sorry to hear about your uncle, man. That's never easy. And I certainly hope that you don't bounce out of the Liberty Movement, man. That would be a huge loss, be a huge blow for the momentum. And I feel like, if anything, we need all hands on deck right now, kind of like you're saying. So hopefully our listeners and the Liberty Freedom community could kind of come together and make some legitimate, significant change, you know. That's certainly what we've been pushing for the last 7 years now with the Free Thought Project. You often say all gun control is racist. This, is, of course, is like a huge departure from many of the left-wing talking points and sentiments. And we agree completely. We've actually made content basically saying the same thing. But when we post it, we get called like gun nuts or right-wing extremists when we present this idea. So, like, what do you say to people like that?
I read them stuff like the Tennessee Constitution. You know what I'm saying? Like, literally. Like, I think it's like Article, like, 11, 26 or something of, like, the 1796 Tennessee Constitution. It was like, it literally got revised from the freemen of the state, like, have a right to keep and bear arms for their common defense. And it got switched to the free white men of the state have a right to keep and bear arms for their common defense. Like that's not like me saying that. That's not like a feeling. It's like, that is, like, documented, you know? Like North Carolina, you know, the right of the people from the 17th article of, like, 1776 of the North Carolina Constitution. Like, the people have a right to bear arms for the defense of the state, right? Standing armies, time of peace, dangerous to liberty, they ought to not be kept up, and that the military should be kept under strict subordination to and governed by civil power. They switched that idea to, like, get rid of the idea that free blacks were protected under that North Carolina Constitution's Bill of Rights, right? Pointing out that, like, the Constitution excluded free blacks from voting, and therefore blacks weren't citizens. Like, this is like the origins of gun control in America. This ain't like me, like, saying, like, a cool T-shirt, even though we do have them on cool T-shirts and hoodies. It's like, no, this is factual, right? You know, and this is like North Carolina, Virginia. Like, this is where it came from, like, the black codes. Like, these are things that was like, yeah, except for you blacks. You know what I'm saying? And black by that, and that at that point, meaning indigenous people to this land as well. First federal gun grab, Wounded Knee. Like, they slaughtered the indigenous peoples, like, turning your guns and killed them. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, nah, bro, it's racist. Now, the smart thing about racism is it adapts with the times. It's no longer politically correct to just say, we don't want you blacks, you niggers, having the, you know what I mean? We don't want you to. They'll do it like they'll change it up into, like, fees and this, and in this neighborhood will issue permits. It's a contradiction. The supreme law of the land is the Constitution of the Bill of Rights. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Every statute that places a limitation or infringement on that is a unconstitutional statute that is not the supreme law of the land. But the media is manipulative, and it makes you think because you live in Chicago that somehow that jurisdiction is supreme to the supreme law of the land, and it's not. And those anti-gun rules came about to stop melanated beings from having the means to defend their life. So that's why gun control, all of it, is racist. It's not like a, oh, well, we're all subject to that. Yeah, cool. Crack was initially dropped off in the black community deliberately, specifically, intentionally. It's not an accident. Now, if white people are caught up by it, yeah, it's collateral damage. But the intended purpose was what it was, you know? And it's like, you can't deny that. And just because now it's like, oh, well, everybody in Chicago has to go through the same process. Okay, great. So now everybody can be addicted to crack. Ooh, that's not a progressive statement. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Now everybody's caught up in the same unconstitutional stuff. So it's not racist, ignoring the origins and the manifestation and the evolution of it. That's stupid. That's dumb. You know, again, last night on the cast, right? It's like the origin of all cannabis criminalization in America is literally the first guy that came up, you know, to create legislation behind it. One, he had business and paper. and hemp was a threat. So that's one. Two, he said marijuana, because they didn't call it cannabis because they wanted to, you know, stigmatize, you know, like Mexicans and things of that nature, right? Marijuana makes white women want to sleep with Negro jazz musicians. That is the moral positioning of the person that created legislation to make cannabis illegal in America. Then it ties into the reefer madness thing and that propagandized thing. It's like, bro, shut up. The founding fathers had hemp farms. Shut up. But again, I understand if you don't know, it's Schedule 1. Heroin federally is the same as weed. It's mathematically and scientifically, we know that to not be accurate. However, it's scheduled the same. My point is, the person isn't aware, they don't study enough, they can fall victim to that, you know? And it's racist. And that's a word that's tossed very lightly now. I don't toss it. When I do toss it, oh, it fits. Gun control, all of it in America is racist. It was based on race. The expansion of it was raced. And just because the power starts to corrupt absolutely and inculcate more people, doesn't mean the change with the original intent. And the current outcome is still black and brown people in America are most negatively impacted by gun control laws than any other quote-unquote race of people in America. So the outcome is exactly the same as the original intent. They just don't call it the same thing.
Exactly. No? And what helps aid that unequal treatment under the same law of gun control laws is the war on drugs. Like you said before, you know, the war on drug punishes black people far more than their white counterparts. You know, you have two people for the same crime, and it's you can look at all the data, and all the data show that black people for the exact same crime as their white counterpart get stricter sentences, you know, more probation, more parole, and then they get wound up, they get tightened up into this system or tangled up in this system, and then they, when they try to fight back or they try to just to defend themselves, they have a felony, and, you know, then they want to just have a gun because they live in a neighborhood that's crime-ridden thanks to the war on drugs and the mafia that it creates behind it all. And so they get caught with a gun for just trying to protect themselves, and they get, you know, it's just this vicious cycle. It's such a vicious cycle that they even have a word for it called recidivism. Right. And the government's completely aware of all that, and they know it all. They know all this, you know, and people are talking about we need to end racism, but they're not proposing any of these solutions like that, man. And it's just so frustrating that that you could, like, yes, there's a lot of racist cops out there, but you know what strips the power of a racist cop to be able to go out there and harass black people is you fucking take away the war on drugs, and they're not going to go stop and frisk people and pull people over and go on fishing expeditions and all this. So, yeah.
Portugal has shown us the way. Portugal legal or decriminalized, whichever word people want to use. You know what I mean? And violent crime dropped like 80% in 2 years.
Yep. I mean, the cartels in Mexico are going to avocados and other kind of shit because, you know, when we started legalizing more weed and growing more weed in the United States, they were kind of going out of business. No one wants that Mexican dirt weed anymore, you know, when you can get some kush right from California. It creates crime, and the government knows this, and there's just so many people that don't understand that, you know, and it is frustrating, you know. It's but I'm not going to go yell at anybody and tell them that. But you just got to plant those seeds and try to, you know, hope people that finally grasp that one day that the drug war is the root of so much evil and suffering in this country.
Most people, when educated properly, hey, man, this is heroin. This may fuck you up this way in 6 months. If you want to do it, you can. We're not going to lock you up for it, and we're not going to help you after you get caught on it. You know what this is. Be able to stand what you do. Most people will look at Timmy or Bob or Rashawn that's on heroin 4 or 5 months in and go, oh, shit, nah, I'm good. And if they do decide to do it, it's your choice. You're aware of it. And that's freedom. I don't have to agree with your freedom. I smoke cigars, bro. That is, like, come on. It's cancer. Like, stop it. Like by every metric, if I'd smoked, I smoke a cigar maybe once every couple of weeks, right? But you still do it. It's tobacco. It's nicotine.
Yeah, I love cigars, man.
You see what I'm saying? And it's a choice. And I'm just like, would I be, like, surprised if, like, hey, man, you might have some cardio issues. You may not be able to breathe as good. You may want to cut back on cigars for a few months. know what I'm saying? Like, no, I'm making a decision, you know? Now, imagine if America said, we've shown that cigarettes cause or directly related to over 100,000 deaths annually, factually. We're going to outlaw them. America would be up in arms. How dare you tell me I can't smoke a cigarette? Extract that same thought process when it comes to tree or any drug. Or just go, yo, bro, like, don't expect us to pay for your, like, ventilator when you get on lung cancer because you smoked cigars twice a day for 30 years. You knew that. You inform the people and let them make decisions, but you can't control a well-informed populace. So I get it. It's a beautiful ugly. Let's inform them about certain things, not on others. Let's not give them too much liberty. I get it. But the founding fathers laid us a blueprint. And if the black dude from the hood that clearly sees the contradiction of the founding fathers in regards to race and owning humans, if I can use some of the stuff that they wrote down, everybody else should be able to. You know what I mean? And it's just, again, presenting that information, applesaucing it for people, planting that seed. And if you don't want it, cool. I'm Thanos. I'm on my 77 acres. I'm fishing. I'm shooting deer that run on my land. I'm building stuff. I'm growing food. I'm going to learn how to meditate better and then levitate or some shit. Like, that's what I'm going to do. If y'all don't want it, I'll put my body of work out there. The legacy is already solid, and we move forward. You have the freedom to be as dumb and controlled as you want to be. And your choices and actions or lack thereof will determine that.
Great points, man. You have time for one more quick question?
Yeah.
In October 2018, we lost nearly 6 million fans when Facebook and Twitter both coordinated to remove our pages. I know you have a big following on social media. You got like 60,000 followers on Twitter, 70,000 on Instagram. Have you personally experienced any censorship? And have you prepared at all for any type of large-scale censorship? You know, we weren't really prepared when we lost those 6 million fans, and it definitely took a hit. And, you know, we've been rebuilding ever since. And what do you think is like the best way to combat big tech censorship that seems to be affecting so many?
I've been shadow banned. That's why I've been floating it right at like 60,000 on some of the platforms for some time. Mm-hmm. I've been shadow banned for some time. That's been my experience with it. I think the answer is making sure that we get like real boots on the ground-ish again. You know what I'm saying? I'm not past the point of putting all of your content on flash drives and storing it, or putting it on a hard drive and then if they switch up, okay, let's start selling and shipping, creating content, putting it on hard drives, and selling the hard drives to people, right? Or selling them access to you, and then you can email your content right to them. Like, you just got to get around it, you know, when technology shows you how to get around it. You know, we didn't like albums. You know, we were file sharing. Napster came to be. LimeWire came to be. You just got to be willing to be more hands-on if that something like that comes up. I have a bunch of like DVD and CD producing machines, like hard drives. I'm cool with buying 10,000 flash drives and putting the Solutionary logo on them, and you know, like if you know you can come into the store and get an upload of the information and you put it on your own platform, on your own hard drive, and you do it that way. It's like we can't get scared to get a little less technologically savvy on their platforms. It's theirs. You know, now we also can sue them. Stop saying you're a free market, you know, freedom of speech platform. You're misleading your investors. You're lying, which is like fraud, which is like IRS charges and civil charges. We can bring if a million people sued them in court individually, not that class action shit, like, 1 million people said, I am suing Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, for their bias and their misleading shareholders, the people that are investors, to tell them the platform is free, but they're censoring certain people. That is like a misrepresentation. That might fall in alignment with like an antitrust lawsuit or some shit like that. I'm not a lawyer, but in my mind, that's one way of fighting back. You got to make it financially like scary to get in the way of freedom of speech. The problem is we complain, but we don't lawsuit. America was built on money and violence. Sometimes you have to violently attack people's money to get them to fall back. They bullying it right now. And if you would say, hey, we're a left-leaning, non-freedom platform, then people could go, oh, well, I don't want to be over there. But you're pretending that you're freedom of speech, then you're, again, it's the same thing. It's like gun control. Oh, we're not racist. Yes, you are. You're just not saying you're racist anymore, but your actions and deeds are showcasing it. People got to sue individually. Sue them. You know, they'll start a few people, they'll beat the case. A few people, they'll settle out of court. Some people, it'll fight up all the way to the Supreme Court. And then, you know, they'll get sued and lose a lot of money, and they'll change their practices. It's the only way. You got to sue people. You know what I mean? Well, that's not the only way, but this is one of the more impactful ways of doing it, in my view. And, but as far as, like, getting your pages snatched and things like that, you got to be willing to go hard and hands-on. You know what I mean? Get in the street. And it becomes inventive. It becomes almost like retro. You know what I mean? Like, certain stores now are selling vinyl records again. It's like, oh, this is hipster and cool and cutting edge again. Imagine how cool it is if, you know, people could buy a flash drive from the Free Thought Project. They could send it to you guys, right? I mean, they could pay for it. You send it to them with a bunch of content preloaded. They could upload it to their hard drive, and then they could send their email, and they gave you, you know, like $10 a month, and you could email them your content directly. You could make it. It didn't even have to be on one of those platforms, you know? Now, imagine if you had 6 million people that way giving you $10 a month. Then it becomes, you know what I'm saying? And it's just from, I'm emailing it. Bam, 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 bam. And sometimes they'll send you back and go, yo, send me the 2020 bundle of info and content. And give me the 2020 flash drive. I got the last 4 or 5 years of flash drives, right? And now I'm re-upped for this year's content. And it was direct to consumer. That's how Apple did it. Like, they look, you want one single? We're going to Apple Music. We can sell you one single. Same concept. We got to be willing to do that ugly work, though. Those companies put a lot of work into their infrastructure, and it's theirs. They're lying about it, which opens them up for civil options, but it's still theirs. It's theirs. So that's what I think in regards to that. We got to be willing to kind of get our hands a little more dirty again.
Sure. No, that makes perfect sense, man. And yeah, you know, that is thinking outside the box. I think, you know, an idea that certainly crossed our mind, but it feels like playing the game on social media is kind of the only way to go right now. So we've been kind of spinning our wheels and just trying to gain ground again. But, you know, even that scene has changed, as all things do over the course of time. But man, Maj, you're a wealth of information, brother. You know, you think outside the box. We certainly appreciate that. You're very articulate, very driven, obviously a natural leader. It's been awesome getting to talk to you for a bit. It's certainly long overdue. We've been following and supporting you for years now. So thank you for your time, and keep up the great work. And please, please, please don't bounce out in 2022. We definitely need more leaders up in here.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate y'all for having me. Send me whatever the links is so I can repost it, as well as if anybody's moved by anything that we discussed today, or if you agree with a modicum of what I've said, shared, please support our work. GoFundMe.com/Black Guns Matter. Conflict resolution, de-escalation, basic firearms training, and political education is more so now than, I don't know, any time that I've known since I've been alive. It's needed in urban America in these centers, and that's the work that we do. We've raised over $365,000 and given it away. Our goal is of $1 million. We'll buy a building and a factory. We're going to do all the things out of that, still making the classes available for free to people, or people are paying it forward. It's a beautiful showing of voluntarism and independent choice and collective working together and all of that. So if you support, man, if you're one of those really rich guys or gals that want to just go, hey, Maj, you did the right thing, we're going to give you the remaining $600,000. You know, or $6 or $60, whatever. GoFundMe.com/Black Guns Matter. As well as, lastly, if you're going through something, man, follow me on social media. Let's talk about it. I give my phone number away freely. DM me. You know, we got 22 people. Some of my friends are veterans. I'm against the war, but I understand why a lot of these guys go into that field. They do usually doing it for, like, the benefits to the GI Bill or something like that. There's 22 vets alone that kill themselves every day, not to mention, you know, 60% of gun, quote-unquote, violence in America is suicides. So if you're going through something, man, you know, reach out, follow me, let's chop it up about things. I'd rather you, you know, talk to me about it and get it off your chest as opposed to, you know, doing something that's irreparable. So that's all I got to say, and I appreciate you all for listening.
We'll definitely be putting the links to your organization, to your social media, and to your GoFundMe in the notes for the podcast, in the article caption. So definitely look for that, everybody, and support Maj. He's doing great things. It's been awesome having you on, dude.
Thank you. I appreciate y'all.